The Journey Home, Chapter 1, Michael Thomas. The black plastic pieces flew in all directions as Mike pushed his inbox a bit too hard against the cubicle wall of his sales office. It was another instance where an inanimate object bore the brunt of Mike's growing anger at his situation. Suddenly, a head popped up through the dusty leaves of a plastic plant to his left. "Everything okay over there?" asked John from the next cubicle. The walls of each cubicle were just high enough to allow a person to pretend he had an office of his own. Mike had placed several tall items on his desk. This had the effect of hiding the fact that his co-workers were only about 4 feet from him at all times, all of them sharing in the pretense that they were alone in their spaces having private conversations. The glow of white fluorescent light from the myriad naked fixtures above the cubicles bathed Mike and his peers in the kind of false illumination only found in institutions and industry. It seemed to absorb all the red in the visual spectrum, turning everyone pale, even though they lived in sun-drenched California. Years without direct sunlight made Mike seem doubly pale. "Nothing that a trip to the Bahamas wouldn't cure," replied Mike, without looking at the plant that had John's head showing through it. John shrugged and returned to his phone conversations. Even as the words escaped his mouth, Mike knew that he would never see the Bahamas on the salary of an order taker working in the coal mine, as the employees called the sales factory they worked for. He started picking up pieces of the plastic tray that he had shattered, and he sighed, something he found himself doing a lot lately. What was he here for? Why didn't he have the energy or the incentive to make his life better? His gaze took in the dumb-looking stuffed bear that he had bought himself. It said, "Hug me." Next to it was his favorite Far Side cartoon, something about the blue bird of happiness escaping Ned, the cartoon character. Instead, he was being visited by the chicken of depression. It didn't matter how many smiling faces or cartoons he tacked up on the cubicle walls, Mike still felt stuck. He was glued to an existence that resembled the workings of an office copy machine, every day duplicating over and over without any purpose. The frustration and helplessness that he felt made him angry and depressed, and it was beginning to show. His supervisor had even mentioned it. Michael Thomas was in his mid-30s. Like many others in his office, he was in survival mode. It was the only job he could find where he didn't have to care about what he did very much. He could simply disengage for 8 hours a day, go home, sleep, try to pay his bills on the weekend, and go back to work again on Mondays. Mike realized that he only knew the names of 4 people in this Los Angeles office of over 30 individuals. He just didn't care. And he'd been at this for over a year, ever since the emotional breakup that had shattered his life forever. He never shared his memories with anyone, but they ran through his head almost nightly. Mike lived alone, except for his solitary fish. He had wanted a cat, but the landlord wouldn't allow it. Mike knew he was playing victim, but his self-esteem was at an all-time low, and he continued to massage the wound that was his life, purposely keeping it open, hurt and bleeding, so he could recall it at will. There wasn't anything else he felt he could do, and he wasn't certain he had the energy to change things, even if he had wanted to. He had named the fish Cat, just for fun, and he would speak to it each time he came home or left for work. "Keep the faith, Cat," Mike would say to his finned friend on the way out. Of course, the fish never said anything in return. Over 6 feet tall, Mike was somewhat imposing, till he smiled. His grin carried with it a charm that melted all prejudgments anyone might have upon seeing his large frame. It was not by chance that he found himself working on the phone where customers could not see him. Rather, it was a purposeful way of denying himself his best attribute, almost like a self-imposed prison, allowing him to wallow in the melodrama of his current situation. He excelled at people skills, but he seldom used them, except when necessary, at work. Mike did not cultivate friends willingly, and the opposite sex, it didn't even exist for him in his current mindset, although they would have liked to. "Mike," his male co-workers would say, "when is the last time you got lucky? You need to get out there and find a good woman. Get your mind off your life." Then they would go home to their families, dogs and loving children, and sometimes a fish, too. But Mike couldn't fathom how to start the process of rebuilding his lost love life. It just wasn't worth it, he decided. "I found my partner early," he would say to himself, except that she didn't know it. He had been very much in love, with all the expectations that go with it. She, on the other hand, had just been having fun. When that fact was finally brought home, it was as if Mike's entire future had shriveled up and disappeared. He had loved her with a singular passion that he believed he would feel only once in his life. He had spent it all on her, and she had thrown it away. Raised by his parents on a farm in the small town of Blue Earth, Minnesota, Mike escaped what he felt was a dead-end situation, that of growing crops that were either purchased by a foreign country or were stored indefinitely in large silos due to an overabundance of grain. Very early on, he knew that farming was not for him. It didn't seem to be valued even by his own country. What good was it? Besides, he couldn't stand the smell of it all, and he wanted to work with people instead of animals and tractors. He did well in school, and he was absolutely stellar in anything that involved interaction with others. Ending up in sales was a natural for Mike, and he had no problem at all finding good jobs, selling a multitude of products and services he could represent with honesty. People love to buy things from Michael Thomas. When he looked back at what his now deceased parents had given him, he realized that the one thing that had stuck was his belief in God. A lot of good it was doing right now, he often thought bitterly. Mike was an only child, and his parents, his beloved mom and dad, had been killed in a car accident just before his 21st birthday. He still mourned them greatly and always kept photos around to remind him of their lives and deaths. Through everything, even now, Mike kept going to church and at least went through the motions of worship. When asked about his spiritual health by the minister, Mike openly admitted his faith and the belief in his spiritual nature. He was certain that God was just and loving, but not really in his corner at the moment, or even for the last few years, for that matter. Mike often prayed for a better situation, but he had little optimism that things would really change. With the ruddy complexion of his father, Mike was not really handsome, but attractive in a rugged sort of way. Women found him irresistible. His flashing smile, blonde hair, tall frame, square jaw, and deep blue eyes were captivating. Those who had good intuition also knew that Mike was a man of integrity, and they trusted him almost instantly. He'd had many opportunities to take inappropriate advantage of situations, both in business and in romance, but he'd never done so. Mike was a product of farm consciousness, one of the only valuable attributes that followed him from the cold country of his upbringing. He couldn't lie. He understood intuitively when others needed assistance. He opened doors for people coming into and out of the supermarket, respected and spoke to elders, and always gave the down-and-out men and women in the street the dollar bills they asked for, even if he suspected it might be wasted on alcohol. He felt that everyone should work together to make things better, and he never understood why people didn't speak to each other in his adopted town or seldom even met their own neighbors. Perhaps it was because the weather was so nice that people never needed help. How ironic, he thought. Mike's only female role model was his mom. Therefore, he treated all women with the kind of respect he had known for that wonderful, sensitive woman whom he missed greatly. Part of his misery now was the seeming betrayal of this respect in the only real relationship he had ever had. Actually, Mike's experience had only been a result of culture clash. What was expected from one person was not what was given, and vice versa. The California girl who had broken his heart was only following what she believed was her cultural truth about love. But Mike hadn't seen it that way. He had been taught differently, and he didn't have tolerance for other ideas about love. And so it is that our story really begins. Here was Michael Thomas at his lowest ebb, coming home on a Friday night ready to greet his studio-style two-room apartment, two rooms that included the bathroom. Mike had stopped at the store to pick up the meager groceries he needed to exist for the next few days. Long ago, he had found out that he could make his money go very far indeed if he bought the generic brands and used his coupons wisely. But his real key to frugality? Don't eat much. Mike purchased packaged items that didn't need to be cooked. Then he didn't have to use the stove or pay for the electricity. This practice left him unfulfilled, somewhat hungry, and always without a dessert to look forward to, which seemed to fit his self-imposed role of victim just fine. He also found that if he ate everything right from the package over the sink, he didn't even have to wash any dishes. He hated washing dishes, and often bragged to John, his co-worker and only friend, about how he had solved the problem. Knowing Mike's habits, John commented in jest that before long, Mike might find a way to do everything, even going without an apartment by living at the nearest homeless shelter. John had laughed and slapped Mike on the back when he said it. Mike, however, had actually considered it. By the time Mike got home from the store, it was dark. A heavy mist had been trying to turn into rain most of the day and was still at it, turning everything slick and shiny in the artificial yellow rays of the streetlight reflected on the apartment steps. Glad to be living in Southern California, Mike often remembered the hardships of the winters in Minnesota, where he had grown up. All during his youth, he had a passion for anything from California. He swore to himself that he had to escape the punishment of weather that everyone else simply took for granted. Why would anybody choose to live where you could die in 10 minutes from exposure? He would ask his mom. She would smile and just look at him, then say, "Families stay where their roots are, you know. Besides, it's safe here." That was her family's sermon about how dangerous Los Angeles was and how nice Minnesota was. That only made sense if you didn't add death by freezing. Mike couldn't convince her that the danger of earthquakes was like a lottery. It might happen in your lifetime, and it might not. Grueling Minnesota winters, however, were the norm every year, a cyclical occurrence that you couldn't absolutely count on. Needless to say, Mike escaped his country home as soon as he was done with high school, moving to California for his college years. He had used his sales ability to personally finance everything he did. Now he wished he had stayed home for a while, to be with his mom and dad during the years before the accident. He had lost precious times with his parents in his quest to escape the cold, or so he thought. He felt selfish in retrospect. In the dim light, Mike trudged up the front steps to his ground floor apartment and fiddled around with the keychain. He balanced his grocery bag and slid the key into the lock. The key went in normally. But that's when, on that Friday night, normal stopped for Michael Thomas. On the other side of the door was a gift, potentially a part of Mike's destiny, something that would change his life forever. Due to a warped door frame, Mike had learned to use his body weight to help open the stubborn entrance to his lodgings. The result was that the door always burst open forcefully. Mike had perfected the method of balancing a bag of groceries on one hip, slipping the key into the lock, turning it, and pushing with his foot all at the same time. This maneuver required an awkward hip movement, and although it got the job done, his friend John had commented that it looked very funny indeed. The obstinate door flew open with the impact of Mike's hip, startling the thief, who was busy in the darkened room. With the swiftness of a frightened cat and years of experience with the unexpected, the uninvited man, a good foot smaller than Mike, instantly darted forward, grabbed Mike's arm, and yanked him into the room. Since Mike's balance was in the funny mode of opening his sticky door, he was already in full forward motion. The thief's action easily tumbled Mike into the apartment and smashed his large frame to the floor, where the groceries were launched against the far wall with enough force to break the seals on the packages. Just before he hit the floor, a shocked Mike, with all his bodily alarms going off at once, heard the door slam behind him, with the thief still inside. Mike caught a quick glimpse of the broken glass his face was headed for, a result of the shattered window that had allowed the smaller man to enter. These are often the times recounted after the fact when people say that things slowed down in their minds. This was not the case for Michael Thomas. The seconds screamed by in a blur, compressing time and creating overwhelming panic. The man who had broken into the apartment was determined to continue his quest to remove the apartment's television and stereo, and he certainly didn't care what happened to his victim. Hardly had Mike fallen to the floor when the man was on top of him with hands like a sweaty vise, gripping Mike's throat. The man's eyes were wide and inches from his own. Mike could feel and smell the hot, foul breath in his face and the weight of the man's rump on his stomach. He instinctively reacted as any person would who was about to die, and mustered up a move one might only witness in a B-movie. Despite his disorientation with all his force, he quickly threw his head forward, smashing against the thief's head. It worked. The assailant, surprised by the force of the move, released his grasp long enough for Mike to violently roll to one side and try to stand up. Before he could right himself, however, the thief again attacked, this time with a strong blow to Mike's midsection. Mike was actually lifted up by the impact and fell back and to the left, brutally connecting with something big that he dimly realized was his aquarium. With a hellish noise, the cabinet, the aquarium, and the solitary fish joined the groceries against the back wall of the small room. Mike was in pain and without breath. He gasped, his lungs on fire from oxygen deprivation, as his widening eyes watched a boot that seemed as big as Montana descend upon him. His assailant was grinning now. It happened too fast. The boot found its mark. Mike felt and heard the few bones in his throat and neck crunch in a horrible way. He gasped in horror, knowing absolutely that his air passage was gone, and perhaps his spine, too. His entire body reacted to the snapping and popping of his mutilated neck. Shock tore through his consciousness as the reality of his situation began to sink in. This was it. Death was near. He tried to cry out, but his voice box wouldn't work. There was no more air for Mike, and things quietly went dark. All was quiet. The thief hurried to conclude his night's work, unconcerned about the very still man on the floor, when he was again startled by a racket at the much-abused apartment door. "What's going on in there? Is everything all right?" A neighbor was frantically pounding his fist on the uncompromising wood. The thief cursed his luck and grudgingly moved toward the broken window. He punched out some remaining glass shards to clear his way and easily slipped through. Mike's neighbor, who had never actually met Mike, heard the sound of more glass breaking inside and decided to try the doorknob. Finding the door unlocked, he entered to find the apartment trashed and a man fleeing through a broken window. Moving silently in the near dark to avoid the TV and stereo oddly stacked in the middle of the room, the neighbor snapped on a light switch and a bare bulb came to life on the ceiling. "Oh my God!" He heard his voice break in shock. In a split second, the man was on the phone dialing for help. An unconscious and critically injured Michael Thomas lay on the floor. The room was quiet now, the only sound being that of a flopping fish 2 feet from Mike's head. Cat was wiggling among the lettuce and pre-cooked noodles from the spilled groceries, an unsavory mix now beginning to redden from the slowly growing puddle of Mike's blood.